The hope, done sensibly, is that the incentives that for investment and economic growth will bring in enough growth and therefore tax revenue.
So this was kind of the big social media story in the news. Twitter said that it is based on the behavior of an account. So if an account looks particular...
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And welcome to the Allstate Skyline Studio and the Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand here on this Wednesday afternoon. You heard the voice of Randy Schaefer there mentioning Twitter. Twitter might be getting rid of the likes. Maybe not the like button. We'll talk to her about that a little bit later in the program. I said in the promotions for today's show that Terry Savage would be here and she would help make sense of it all. She's on a phone line now, but I don't think she's up to the job. I don't know if anyone can make sense
of it. I'm not.
So over the last 2 days, if the Dow holds today, the last 2 days, we'll see a gain of over 700 points, but still we'll end the month at about 5% down. So give it your best shot. What's going on?
I will. October is the cruelest month, and September, too. And the reason we call it the fall, not autumn, I think it's because of the stock market.
Didn't Shakespeare say it was April? Does he know nothing?
April was supposed to be the cruelest month, but for investors, the fall is. Yeah. The original Black Friday, 1869, was in September. But October, the panic of 1907, October. Black Thursday and Monday of 1929, those of you students of history, October. Black Monday, October 1987, that horrific day when the stock market collapsed. And September's not far behind with bad days. There's a whole slew of them. September 2001, of course, 9/11, and 2008 were the single big point declines bigger than 1987.
Was that flash drop kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. So, 2008 was actually the mortgage crisis, the beginning of the mortgage crisis. And September and October are just devastating months for the stock market. Historians saying, well, that's not exactly true, but we all know that it's got a very psychological impact. But let me give you one more surprising piece of information. And this comes from Investopedia. It says, surprisingly, October has historically heralded the end of more bear markets than the beginning. And that may make it one of the better buying opportunities for contrarians.
Well,
in fact, 1987, 1990, 2001, 2002 turned around in October.
Well, that kind of goes contrary then to the column that you wrote this week that said, it's time to, take stock.
Take some money off the table. I've been saying that for a few months, and I'll tell you why. Bulls make money, bears make money, and pigs get slaughtered. So my top line in the column up at TerrySavage.com is figure out who you are. You're a young investor. You're putting money away in your 401k. Just keep contributing. Don't worry about this. But for those who are nearing retirement, who are going to have to take year-end retirement minimum distributions this year, we don't know what the year-end will bring. Will it be the start of another rally, or will every portfolio manager say, oh my gosh, I still have some gains, I better sell and lock them in so my performance looks good? And you don't, if you have a real short-term time horizon, which is not only the few years in your retirement, but a few months to take withdrawals, you'd like to have some liquidity now.
Okay, so we'll do that, and we'll watch that. Read the column at TerrySavage.com. Some good news from the Labor Department. Wages up 3.1%, the highest jump in a decade, so we've been waiting for that. That's positive.
You know, there's great economic news, and it's always a reminder that recessions, that the market crashes and economic recessions don't typically start at the same time. In fact, market declines typically start when all the economic news is good. Now, we also had news from ADP, a stronger jobs report than most people have been thinking. Wages are up, General Motors and Facebook, both of them surprising a little bit to the upside. So what you're having is a whole bunch of good economic news. Number one, it adds two things, though, that could impact stocks. Number one, it means the Fed will most likely raise interest rates, not be deterred by what the president says. It shows that we have a strong enough economy, so there'll be a December increase. And number two, since wages are a cost to business, it shows that either the combination of higher rates businesses have to pay when they borrow and higher wage costs means that either their margins will be, the profit margins will be slimmer, or they'll decide to raise prices and we'll see inflation. So that's the good news, is great news for anybody looking for a job today. The economy's strong. Consumers yesterday, their highest optimism levels in 18 years. That's all great news. However, it does not conflate with thus the stock market should go to the moon. In fact, it might just trigger some of the reasons the stock market could sell off.
Terry Savage. And so, you know, we were having this conversation with John Williams earlier this week, and I said that the economy was doing well, and a caller took issue and said, well, the stock market's doing well, but that's not really an indication of the economy. That's not true, right? I mean, by most measures, the economy, doing better than the stock market so far this year.
Indeed. In fact, the economy, I mean, there's very little to complain about in the economy except the potential for higher prices of raw materials, higher interest rates, maybe an inability of a generation of consumers to get in the housing market and buy. Those are some worrisome things that we'll look back on and say, well, we should have seen that. Nobody could buy a house because rates were up and prices were up because of tariffs. But rising wages are certainly a help. The economy's okay. Very few people are complaining about the economy unless they don't qualify for the many unfilled skilled labor jobs. But the stock market, even though it's a part of consumers' expectations for the future, people feel better when the stock market is up, so they'll go out and spend, even though they're not taking money out of their 401k. They love looking at it and saying, oh, I'm rich, I'm rich, I'm richer. But when they're not tied to each other in a measurable way. If someone could create an index that said every time the economy peaks and things look best, 6 months later the stock market is down, we would all know to sell today. But we just don't have a complete relationship except that we know they're not one and the same.
Terry,
and the seeds of the decline, next decline, are sown in today's great economic news.
Terry, nice to talk to you this week. Enjoy your week. We'll see you next week.
Absolutely.
It's 12:23. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. In the studio now is Barry Sterner, who, of course, is the president of Townstone Finance, a financial, and joins us from time to time. We read commercials for Barry, and I like it when you come by. Nice to see you again.
Thanks for having me.
No one's buying any houses, Barry. What's going on?
I don't know if no one's buying any houses.
Well, there was the September job report came out right in Chicago. Home sales were down 16%. You take the nine collar area, they were down 12% from the year before. So it does. Maybe that's an outlier this month, but it does seem like it doesn't fit. I mean, the economy's doing well. It doesn't fit. What gives here?
You know, I think we got to a place in affordability. We talked from 2 years, you and I, not enough houses for sale, not enough houses
right.
for sale. Everyone who would come on your show would say, not enough houses for sale. And because there was a lack of supply, obviously, Econ 101, prices went up. Did prices go up too much, too quickly for the average person to afford a house right at the moment? So you were looking at houses, you saw that it's going up, it went up $25,000 on your block here. I have people on my street raising up their prices. And I think that, you know, we plateaued a little bit. And just like you were talking to Terry Savage about the stock market, you know, we went straight up. We had that whole month that we were going straight up. And we have to find a place where people are comfortable again. And I think we're going to find that at lower numbers.
So when, and I was talking to you this off the air, and it was brilliant off the air, so I'll try to.
We always sound better.
I'm curious about the interest rate slowing down home sales, because in my experience, every time I've purchased a home, it was because I was in a time in my life when I needed to purchase a home. Maybe I was done renting. I was a single guy. I bought my first condo. Then I was engaged to be married. Bought my second condo. We got married. Moved to it. You know, so it was life situations that brought me to it. It wouldn't. And so a 0.5% or even a 0.5% increase in the interest rate would not have stopped me from doing that. So who are these home buyers who have interest rates slowing them down? Are these people moving from place to place? Are these speculators? I don't quite get that.
You know, I have a article.
Does that make sense?
Makes a lot of sense, and I think I have your answer in this big sheet that I have from the National Association of Realtors. And they're talking about first-time home buyers. 34% of home buyers right now across the country are first-time home buyers.
Okay.
And most of them don't have a large down payment. That's a problem.
So they're not ready to buy a home.
They're trying to buy a home, and this is the lower level here. They're trying to buy a home, but they're settled down. The average person coming out of school right now in this study, and I didn't really go through the study,
sure,
has over $30,000 worth of student loan debt. So as we're talking, Yes, the older person who doesn't have, who's been out of school for a while, I don't think the point is really hurting them. But the lower end, the millennial that you want to talk about, the 20 to 33, 34-year-old person right now.
The person who might be renting now anyway.
Renting right now. Their debt levels already are starting at $30,000 a month. They're making those payments. So I definitely think that a half point, three quarters of a point, a point from last year, that will affect their affordability.
Oh, you got 30 seconds or so, but is there something that's going to free this up and get it going? Is it
lower prices?
Lower prices, you think?
I think lower prices.
Even with the less inventory, the low inventory, just lowering the prices on.
I believe inventory levels, and I've been watching them, and you'll see probably coming in the coming months, have been increasing steadily. There's a lot more houses for sale right now, and the affordability levels are going to get to a point where supply equals demand.
Barry Sterner, the president of Townstone Financial. How do people find you, Barry?
312-896-2110 or townstone.com.
Or just listen to me.
Listen to Steve.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank, right here on 720 WGN. Randy Schaefer will be here in a little bit. She's a digital news editor at the Chicago Tribune, so we'll talk about what's been getting the buzz there. And also that couple, was it Yosemite? There was a Indian blogging couple taking apparently a selfie, and they fell off a cliff, fell 800 feet. So we talked to her about what's going on Instagram and all that. We'll kick that around with Randy. Right now in the studio is Frank Sennett. Frank's the Director of Digital Strategy at Crane Chicago Business and joins us on most Wednesdays. Frank, good to see you.
Good to see you, Steve.
Oh, it's so good to see you. I didn't turn your mic on. Welcome.
Good to see you.
So, you know, I was thinking before you were coming in, a week from today, the election will be over.
Unbelievable. We're in the home stretch.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited. I love election nights. I don't think I'm working, so can't wait to get a big bowl of popcorn and watch to see how things go.
It's my Super Bowl as well. I just love it.
And
now
it?
With social media, you can follow so many threads. And
well, so Bruce Marano was in the studio today talking to Cochran. Biden is in the western suburbs in St. Charles today, campaigning for the woman running, and her name escapes me, I'm sorry, running against Randy Holtgren, the incumbent Republican there, so they hope they can do well. Greg Hines writes a story. Well, it's a national, or it's a story for all of us, but then he sort of zeroes in on the Sean Casten, Peter Roskam race, and it has to do with this SALT tax, the change in the tax laws, and we've talked about it a lot, how we're limited now in state and local taxes that we can write off, right?
Right.
And Greg looks at this study that talks about how many, what, people in Illinois?
Yeah, so there's this $10,000 cap, so the question was, will he expanded, exemptions, standard deduction, rather, will that, you know, erase the losses? And there's a new analysis that was done on behalf of two Democratic congresswomen in Illinois by the Institute for Taxation and Economic Policy, a progressive think tank. But as Greg says, they can do math. And they are claiming that the estimate is 507,000 local homeowners in the Chicago area.
Wow.
Who have been able to fully deduct state and local taxes will not be able to do so and will take a tax hit this year. Now
I'm jumping around, but let me just say,
yeah.
Lauren Underwood is the woman running
go.
Against
yeah.
Holtgren. I apologize.
So Roskam,
for that.
You know, says that's not true. You know, his camp says, you know, with the expanded deductions elsewhere, people are going to net gain and the economy stimulated, et cetera. So to me, this is a really fascinating issue for this election, but it's speculative, right? And until people actually feel the pain, if there's pain, or see the benefit, if there's benefit, now that the tax law is completely kicked in, the real key is going to be what's
one.
It going to affect the 2020 election.
Right. So, and we're talking about Roskam because Greg's reporting showed that was the congressional district, I think, with the biggest impact. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think it was 70,000 out of 170,000 households.
Yeah, 71,000 out of 170,000 homeowners in that district who had claimed the SALT deduction will lose at least part of it, the report says.
And Roskam's argument is that, well, there are other benefits, but the other groups looked at the other benefits and they don't really quite make up for the difference.
Right. They're saying that the math doesn't add up. Conservative groups, however, are saying that, yeah, because of the expanded the removal of the alternative minimum tax and some of the other deductions, that it will all even out. And again, we'll have to wait till the smoke clears. It's certainly somewhat of a potent issue now as people are anticipating it, maybe talking to their accountants. But really, I think this is going to be kind of a sleeper issue, like roaring out of the gate for 2020.
But it'll be difficult to tell, won't it? I mean, I do my own taxes, so I can learn how much I can't write off. But it's going to be difficult for me to learn just how much I gained from the tax cut, too.
Well, that's true. But, I mean, you'll look at just the bottom line of, you know, what are you paying for your 2018 taxes in 2019 in April versus what you paid this year for 2017. And I think, you know, most people, if they compare it and it's a significant increase or a significant decline, they're either going to say, hey, this worked out for me, or, oh, my gosh, where's my voting booth that I can get into?
Okay, so there's that. Another story by Hines about this. And I think they're taking this up at the city council today, right? Changes in the Hilton Hotel at O'Hare. This is a great story to me. I had no idea that the Hilton Hotel planning with O'Hare and the deal that goes back to 1970, when they weren't sure that hotels at airports were going to work.
Yeah, they didn't know it was going to be a thing, which is really hilarious when you think about it now.
It is totally hilarious.
And the idea, like, people read stories on their phone and listen to music. Right. But yeah, it happened, and it's been very successful. And so the mayor's administration has reached a deal to revamp the operations at O'Hare that will bring the city a little more of a windfall, an additional $20 million to $25 million a year. They will still be managed by Hilton, the 860-room property. The city will get the revenues and give Hilton a management fee under the new plan, where it used to be that Hilton would get the revenues and pass a percentage onto the city. So the city gets the first bite of the apple now.
But wasn't the city also then going to build their own hotel or another hotel out there?
Yeah. So they are, you know, looking at a longer range plan. They had put on ice plans to build a second 300 to 400 room hotel across from Terminal 5, which now serves mostly international passengers, but is going to have Delta, JetBlue, and some other domestics. So the city now has its hands full building 9 new gates. So they're saying they're going to delay the new hotel, give the revamped Hilton a chance to improve its business before throwing new competition. So it's still out there as a possibility, but they're holding off for now.
I'm not sure I like that expansion of the international terminal, because when we fly in and out of there for trips, it's really kind of nice.
It is, yeah.
It's not very crowded. Nope. You've got your own space, but I guess that's the price of progress. Frank Sennett, read more at chicagobusiness.com. Thanks for coming by. It's great to see you.
Yeah, I'll do this more often.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. So our great city has, let's say, a few kinks to work out these days, and one of those is homelessness. But Alderman Walter Burnett is proposing a new tax that might combat that. The Bring Chicago Home Tax is a 1.2% tax on homes worth more than $1 million, and that tax would go to funds to help homelessness programs. This tax would only be for new homebuyers, and they would only pay it once. Okay, maybe we should hear this out. If it could combat homelessness, let's look into it. And you know, Expedia was looking into Chicago recently as well, and I guess they found what they're looking for. Apartment Jet got wrapped up, tied with a bow, and bought by the travel giant right before the holiday booking season gets underway. Apartment Jet allows multifamily apartment owners to list vacant units on Airbnb and other rental sites. And these days, we all know it's all about experience for the everyday traveler. So keep an eye out for a quaint little bungalow that you can bundle right into your flight when you're booking your next trip. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. In the studio now is Randy Schaefer. She is a digital news editor for the Chicago Tribune, joins us from time to time to talk about what's what on social media. Randy, welcome back.
Hey, Steve.
Okay, so I was just talking to Frank Sennett. And it was Yosemite, right? We talk about the how you can't believe what you see on Snapchat or Instagram and all of that. And here's tragedy with it looks like this couple in Yosemite.
Yeah, and this story you actually sent me from The Guardian about an Indian husband and wife who fell to their deaths from a popular outlook at Yosemite while they were taking a selfie.
So we knew about the deaths earlier, and then I think it was the brother of one of the victims said, yeah, they were, and this couple, they're from India, live in the U.S., they just moved, I think, west for a job. but they were known for travel blogging.
Yeah, and the really gutting thing was that she had actually, the wife had actually posted on her blog about the risks of dying while taking selfies.
It's such a sad story. And then reading it too, of course, I've said twice now, they're from India, but back home in India, apparently this is such a thing that there are now selfie warning signs at spots.
Yeah. There are quote-unquote no selfie zones in, you know, kind of dangerous areas where people might want to take photos. And this isn't, you know, this happens everywhere. This happened last summer, was it? On the, what building was it? The roof of London House.
Really?
Yeah. Not too long ago here where, you know, a guy was trying to take a photo for Instagram and unfortunately fell to his death.
Oh, it's just terrible. Okay, so put your cameras away.
Yes.
And
priority over Instagram.
Okay, so Jack Dorsey, the CEO of Twitter, is talking about getting rid of the like button on Twitter.
Yeah.
I hate the like button on Twitter.
You do?
It gets me nothing. If I post something and I want to increase my followership or I want to put more eyes on it, the little heart thing does nothing.
Oh, I love it. It validates all of my thoughts and concerns and opinions.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, it's self-validation.
So when I'm posting something, I'm trying to make it, you know, if it's for my travel company or something, I want it to get a wider, more viewership. So if someone likes it, to me, that's like kissing your sister. That does me nothing.
Oh, I like the likes.
Really?
It makes me feel very validated.
Dorsey doesn't like the likes?
Well, and so this was, this kind of popped up on a few sites earlier this week where it was talked about Twitter's getting rid of the like button, but Twitter was kind of like, you know, pump your brakes. We've talked about a lot of things. Doesn't mean it's going to come to fruition.
So it's not a plan right now. But if he's brought it up a couple times, it's,
right.
I mean, I don't like the like, but why wouldn't Twitter like the like?
I think that kind of, you know, the likes tend to throw off the algorithm a bit. You'll see an old tweet pop up because somebody liked it. Or sometimes certain things will get liked and retweeted that probably shouldn't be on Twitter, like, you know, Nazi accounts, which they kind of have a little bit of a problem with.
Yeah, but then the retweet's going to do the same thing for
right,
that.
Right, right. And that's kind of what I don't get is I personally like the like button. I think it's a really great way to, you know, build a point without retweeting somebody. It's a simple acknowledgement, like, I agree, but...
So, every time I see one of your tweets now, I will make you feel better if I just click on
yes!
it.
Yes!
Okay, I've got a new mission. All right, deadly serious and then lighthearted. So, let's do the deadly serious first. This Gab site, right, the guy who fired up the synagogue was on Gab and bragged about... Or was it him or was he the bomber? One of them was on Gab.
It was the Pittsburgh synagogue shooter,
right.
Yes. And so we've talked about Gab before, but it was kind of developed as this freedom of speech site where anything goes. And it's unfortunately kind of become a home for the quote-unquote alt-right Nazis trolls.
And he says it's not true. He says they're all about free speech, but he blocks Twitter people who don't agree with him.
Yeah, and now Gab is temporarily shut down for the time being. We're going to see how that goes.
Right.
I'm not really sure.
So that's one to watch. And
yeah.
When we talk about social media and government regulation and all, we're always looking at Twitter and Instagram and all of that. But here's this.
And Gab is very, very interesting because it is very full. Like anything goes, which is kind of scary.
Everything kind of festers there. So you're the digital news editor and an editor at the Trib. What's sort of hot with the comments on your pages?
So we actually had some positive stories this week, which is always really nice to hear about. So we had a story about an IDOT Minuteman that came to the rescue of a couple stranded on a highway in Chicago.
Oh, yeah, I read that story.
Yeah, come to find out, the boyfriend was taking his girlfriend on a date and was planning on proposing to her and was worried they'd miss their romantic helicopter ride. But this IDOT Minuteman saved them. They made it to their helicopter ride and got engaged.
And so you got a lot of comments on that?
Yeah, a lot of people were.
I hope people were nice.
They were. They were very pleased to see a good story.
Randy Schaefer from the Tribune. Follow Randy and the rest of the Tribune newsroom on social media at chicagotribune.com. But really, you know, follow her on Twitter and like her.
Yes, all of the likes.
Give her likes.
Thank you for humoring me.
Nice to see you again.